Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I am your host for today, together with my co-host, Pat Schlarbaum. Yeah. And he's also going to be my pitch partner for our fall fun drive.
Fun it is. Yeah. Good to be here with you, Susan.
Things are pretty wild around here. I guess the day before Election Day for a lot of people is to get out the vote, and we're going to do our bit. But I should give you the weather for Election Day. It's not very nice, and it's not very nice all week. It's pretty much cloudy, highs in the low 40s, lows mid to high 20s, and maybe precipitation on Friday, the Veterans Day holiday. But in spite of that gloomy forecast, we have Judy Trumpy with us, representing the League of Women Voters, whose job it is to get us ready to vote. Right, Judy?
Right, that's correct.
And we also have Marlene Ehrlichman. Well, Pat, can you tell what she's going to be doing?
Marlene Ehrlichman is the director of the Iowa Wildlife Center. So we're going to be learning about wildlife rehabilitation and its contributions to the conservation scene in Iowa.
Yeah, and for the rest of the show, we're going to have a book called Blue Sky, White Stars by Surinder Neighborhouse, who's going to be with us for an interview. Well, I guess that we'd better get the election over and then and take the rest of our time to worry about the world around us.
And it is fundraising week, so we'll make our appeal. If you appreciate this programming, please consider becoming our basic membership of $55 per year. But it's really the sustaining memberships that we are really striving for, because like the environment, it takes periodic maintenance and sustenance, just like a radio station. So for $250, you'll be included in a very prominent and important group for the station under the sustaining membership of $250 a year.
Or $20 a month.
Whatever you can budget for, yeah. We will certainly benefit from the contributions of the community, because it is community radio, folks, and this is important work that we are attempting to contribute to the community of Ames, Iowa, and the 45 miles circumference, I guess, around the station here. So we are the heart of Iowa.
We're the heart of Iowa.
And it does make a difference. And this is an all-volunteer effort. Susan Franzen is one of the founding members of KHOI, and she can attest to all the hard work she's put in over the years.
And Cynthia McClure, right?
Yeah. And Pat Schlarbaum, So. a lot of volunteers put a lot of effort into making the radio sound a lot better than it used to, and it's only getting better. And you becoming a member, and also if you choose to volunteer here, it'll change your life. So with that, let's go to the next story, Susan.
Well, the next story is, of course, the election. And Judy Trumpy, whom I met when I was campaigning for Riad Mahaney, the one Muslim who has been on the Ames City Council and a great contributor in many ways to the city of Ames. But Judy was his neighbor, and I met her there. And then I saw her again at the League of Women Voters Forum, where she was very graciously hosting. I guess moderating is the word, right,
yes,
Judy?
Yes, that's right.
And I'm especially grateful for your coming in today so early, because I know that as an election official, which you told me you were, you'll have to start your day even earlier tomorrow. When people come to vote, I think they tend to take the election officials for granted. Why don't you tell me what your responsibilities are and what you have to do before you can unlock the doors at 7 a.m. tomorrow?
Oh, okay. Thank you, first of all, for letting me come in and chat about this. Usually, a lot of times it'll start a month to 6 weeks ahead of time, in that we'll get a call from the auditor's office, and they'll say, can you vote work the election? yes or no. And so usually I've been able to work them. And then we attend a school of election based on our precinct location. We had that last Thursday. So that's a four-hour training where we're reminded of all of our duties and how you set up the equipment, et cetera. And then tomorrow we'll arrive at our precinct, 2-4, which is Ascension Lutheran Church up on Bloomington Avenue. And we get there about 6 o'clock. And since voting has evolved into a really technological venture, we all have we have at least 3 computers, and we set those computers up and get connected to the auditor's office. And then we have the tabulator, the OVI, which is for disabled folks, and get the ballots counted, et cetera. So it takes us a good hour. And then we get the doors open at 7 a.m. And by that time, we breathe a sigh of relief, usually, that we're ready to go.
For full disclosure, I should admit, I served on election boards for 40 years, from the early 60s until after 2000. Actually, my very first election, which fortunately I think must have been a city election, something very small, because we had paper ballots and we had to count them. And so I got to see people writing in, who had people written in Mickey Mouse.
They still do that, believe it or not.
But I always enjoyed it because it was a nice nonpartisan experience, because you, by law, have to have half Republicans and half Democrats.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And they are not always your neighbors. Sometimes they come in from other precincts.
Exactly.
But we got so we really looked forward to seeing each other, and people would bring coffee cakes, and there was a lot of camaraderie. And when the voting was slow during mid-morning and mid-afternoon, we chatted. And the biggest downside was the length of time you had to be there, from 6 a.m. until the tallies on the voting machines were taken, typically at 9 p.m. So that's a long day.
That's a lot of citizenship, and yet it's just one piece of the big puzzle that makes it all
relative. It certainly
is.
And
that's how you generate our appreciation for all that you do at that critical time of our citizenship here
right.
in Iowa.
Yes.
I actually, though, have even met people who were in it for the money. How much do you get per hour?
Well, it's $10.
It's $10 now.
I really haven't tried to figure it out, but
well,
I know it went up.
It's above the minimum wage.
Exactly.
In general, the election was with nonstop voting all day, you can really be pretty exhausted at the end of that day. But the worst was something that has been changed, which I'd like you to explain to prospective voters. And that was when I was an election official. You would have to vote in the precinct of your current residence. So if you had moved a month or two before you wrote down your current address, you'd be sent to the precinct of your current address, which was almost always in another place. You can imagine what this was like in a general election with lines of up to an hour. And, of course, with students moving as often as they do, these were often first-time voters. What an awful introduction to the election process. I understand that doesn't happen anymore, though. Does it, Judy?
Not as much. First of all, folks, voters are a little bit more informed, and they do try to make a habit of getting that all cleared up before they get to the election voting site. Secondly, they can do an election day registration so that if it's a change of an address, they could do it right there. And thirdly, there is a provision that if they come to the wrong precinct, they can fill out a provisional ballot. But we don't encourage that. It takes 10, 15 minutes to print out the documents, and they might just as well head over to their former precinct and vote there. But they could change their address right at the site and vote there as well.
Well, there's another problem that I am aware of because I moved since the last general election. And my particular street, I found out, is not on the list. It's not on the state list. And I had received information about 2 possible polling places I should go to. And so what happens if I show up to the wrong one tomorrow?
If that happens, we look your name up, If it doesn't appear, we always have the auditor's office to call. They're a backup for us. They know what to do. So if there is a question, then they would be able to answer it. We go through everything we can with our computer program, which is called Precinct Atlas. But from there, we can call the auditor's office and get the direct information.
So I guess if there's anybody who has any questions, they could call the auditor's office today.
Yes.
Right? And what's that number?
It's 382-7210. Obviously, I have it memorized because I've had to use it in different situations.
382-7210. So are there any other things that you think we need to be aware of?
We are open at 7, and with the school board election and the city election, it will be lightly attended. And I don't want to discourage anybody from not voting because it's lightly attended. Please get out and vote. These are important positions. There are a lot of important issues coming up. Everybody knows our world is changing, our city is changing, and our funds are dwindling, and we need to all participate in some way so that we can have the best government, the best city that's possible. So come at 7. There won't be any line. In fact, this election, we do not anticipate any kind of a line. We have 3 computers. We also have a 4th computer, which is a flex. It's like wireless computer that we can, if someone comes in and is not registered, we take them over aside and put their information in the flex computer, which is handheld. We can figure out where they vote. So we can make it as fast as we can for them while they're on their lunch hour. And then sometimes starting at 3:30, 4, it'll pick back up. And then after 7, it pretty much dwindles down. And this race election closes at 8. So there might be a few people from 7 to 8. But by 8 o'clock, we're ready to lock the doors and do the counting.
It's good work that is well suited for this time of year. I always think of November elections and this being somewhat of an off year.
Yes.
It really mm-hmm. probably is more significant, more important, if it's ever important. It's
yes.
certainly important
exactly.
this time of year
yes.
to exercise our citizenship and,
you know,
and get out to vote.
Exactly. It gives people a little bit more time to get registered. Not that they didn't have that time before, but since it is a city election, not a federal election or the general election, it gives people time to get registered, ask for an absentee ballot if they want. And it gets us trained again for the general election.
All those opportunities
yes,
are,
exactly.
are spread before us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming in and getting us ready for tomorrow. And if anybody has any questions, they should call 515-382-7210.
That's correct. And thank you.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Judy Tulay. So we have renewable resources on our mind.
Well, that's right.
KHOI is your renewable resource, and it's a renewable resource that relies on your renewed support in order to provide the quality programs you have come to trust and love. Like all renewable resources, KHOI is there for you every day, 365 days a year, powering you through your day with great music and local and international news. But like all renewable resources, it takes careful stewardship to keep it coming. So please pick up your phone right now. Call 515-292-2878 and tell the volunteer who answers the phone, I want to protect my renewable resources. I want to become a member of KHOI. I've been thinking about this for days, and the time has come for me to do my part. So our goal is to sign up 25 new members this fall. So be one of the 25. If you're already a member, consider renewing that membership or moving up to a level higher in the support mechanisms here around the station. Call now at 515-292-2878 or text us at 515-200-7758.
That's text 515-200-7758 or pledge securely online at our website, khoifm.org, and help renew this renewable resource. Basic KHOI membership is $55, but we would appreciate a $100 donation for each membership, or consider becoming one of our Friends of KHOI, people who donate $250 or more to build the foundation of KHOI's Operation Fund. So once again, that number is 515-292-2878 and text us at 515-200-7758 or pledge securely online at our website, khoifm.org. And thank you for your support. So I'm going to root around here and bring out my check, because it is time that that this guy gets his sustaining membership included. So write
so
out
you're
a
walking
check.
The walk and talking the talk.
Yeah. So write out a check for $250 and support Community Radio, KHOI, the heartland of Iowa.
Well, keep this great resource in Central Iowa going. And we keep the lights on and the bills paid. So
and we'll be covering the political activities in the area. You hear plenty about, well, actually, in the evening with Amy Goodman, you can hear great national and international news. But right here on Local Talk,
we brought the ladies in from the League of Women Voters, and we have another lovely lady that Pat brought in about natural resources. So there's a lot of live guests that we bring in that enlighten you about activities and events and many, many things here in Central Iowa. And, you know.
And actually, normally at this time, we would have Bronwyn Beatty Hansen to report on the activities of the City Council. But we've got so much of that this right now that we'll just make sure that we get out and vote for our new mayor and third board council person.
Yeah, after you vote, keep in mind to come down to the KHOI studios. Tomorrow night, we'll have Jen McClung live in the studio. And for those of you that don't know her, Jen is a singer-songwriter with two albums, Wildfire and Over, and a long list of live performances. Jen is also a Pushcart nominated poet, a finalist in the Creative Nonfiction /W.W. Norton Program -OFF, and an avid fiction writer. If you come to the studio at 7 p.m., you can hear her perform and be part of her on-air audience. And so there's a lot of live performances.
Yeah, and we're going to hear a little sample right now.
Let's have some from Jen.
Looking up at a red-tailed hawk, circling around, then dropping off. Folding her hands, then open again, she's trying. The fight has a way of pulling you in. We all want to fly, we all want wings. She's up on that hill, and she's trying. And maybe, maybe, maybe it's alright. Take a step over the line. Maybe, maybe, maybe she will find the wings we can't. It's a long shot, and she knows it. She's building a nest up in a tree, making plans, gathering seeds. Arranging, rearranging, yes, she's trying. The bird's eye view reveals the truth. it's everything. It's every threat of rain. It takes everything. It's asking for just one thing. Driving home in the twilight hour, blurring the lines and wiping the tears. Over the highway she appeared, she was flying. Maybe we're all just tied in a knot. Forget how to fly, forget how the sky gathers us all up till we're flying. And maybe, maybe, maybe it's alright. Take a step over the line. Maybe, maybe, maybe she will find the wings we can't. It's a long shot, and she knows. Oh, now maybe, maybe, maybe it's alright to take that step over the line. It's a long shot, and she knows it. It's a long shot, and she knows it.
And welcome back to Local Talk. In the studio, we're joined with Marlene Erisman. And Marlene is the director of the Iowa Wildlife Center, which is a wildlife rehabilitation center. And you've got some digs over where I used to work, south of the Legislative
That's
Park.
That's right, yeah.
Hi, Marlene.
Hi, Pat. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, and so for those listeners, what is wildlife rehabilitation?
That's a good question.
Well?
A good definition comes from the National Wildlife Rehabilitators Association, and it basically means it's the care of indigenous wildlife that have been orphaned or injured or otherwise displaced with the subsequent return to their natural habitats. So you have some key words in there, indigenous, which means native, and you have returning them to their own key habitats. So it's not just turning them loose. It takes into perspective what each of these species brings to us, and each of those species requires particular care.
Yeah, and it seems as if there's a human component. Quite often, you know, there's guy wires, there's all these opportunities of mishap, the roadside, accidents. I know a lot of people, you know, we know about littering. We know about that sort of thing. And quite often, you know, if I had a peach pit or something, I had a tendency just to chuck it on into the ditch. And it was pointed out then that, you know, those type of things in nature, you don't just do one thing. And a peach pit, a piece of bread, that attracts wildlife.
Right. It can attract, absolutely. It can attract rodents,
the mice,
to the ditches.
The rodents, and then you got the hawks and the owls. So as simple as just casting off something, then we have a situation where an injured wildlife is then
hit by car, raptor, right?
Right. And raptors are the birds of prey that can be attracted not only to roadsides, but so what is the percentage of raptors in your care?
Okay, that's a really tough question. I'm gonna kind of rephrase it a little bit. Right now, we get in several raptors a year, okay? And I don't know the percentage But we've gotten in screech owls and great horned owls and red-tailed hawks and bald eagles and you name it. It runs the gamut for – and if you include turkey vultures as a raptor, then we've gotten turkey vultures in as well. We don't have the facilities right now to care for them long term. We can – remember I said that each of these species requires particular care, and that includes caging, not only the diet or the proper medicine, but it also includes the proper caging. And long-term care of some of these species, especially just before release, we need to get them out in some really large outdoor cages so they can become acclimated to the weather again, so they can exercise their muscles again. It's just like us having gone through rehabilitation, and you and I both know what that's like.
Yeah.
So we have to get our muscles working again before we can really get back out there. So percentage-wise, it's small. We often network with other rehabilitators who do have some of those facilities. We have two other raptor centers here in the state, and we do network on to other facilities like them.
But you don't or you do welcome also squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
I know you work with a lot of bats.
Yep,
you know,
bats is one of my what has a particular fond spot in the middle of my heart. I love bats. And we've gotten in five of our nine species of bats here in Iowa so far.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, it's surprising when you see these winged wonders right at dusk. And we were involved with some bat research down near Lake Okwabe one night. And of the nine, we captured six different, I think 11 total. And there were six different species. And I was really surprised that the diversity of bats, of course, little brown, big brown bats.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of your work in mentioning the little brown bats, you can also kind of monitor the health of these critters in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the story of the little brown bats and the fungus.
The white-nose syndrome.
Mm-hmm,
that's right. Well, white-nose syndrome is caused by a fungus that they think was brought over from Europe by cave explorers, basically, on their equipment or clothing, and it contaminated some of our caves out on the East Coast north of New York City, and that's where it all started. And our bats did not evolve with this fungus as the European bats did. And so the fungus causes irritation on the membranes of the nose and the wings of the bats, and it rouses them from a winter hibernation. And that depletes their energy, because when an animal builds up its food stores for a long winter's nap, if they get awakened in the middle of that nap, then they start using their energy. And for bats, they have a really high metabolism, and as soon as they wake up, their heart rate just starts going pitter-patter faster than I can even count, and they start using up that energy, and they ultimately will end up starving to death. And this white-nose syndrome, this fungus, has caused the death of millions of bats that use our cave systems, like our little brown bat, like our big brown bat, like the Indiana bat. Some of our
more endangered
bat species are really going to be in trouble with this. So it's sort of wait and see. It's now come to Iowa, and they have recently found it over in Washington State, I believe. So it's spreading, and it hasn't taken very many years to do that.
And so much of that work or that documentation is handled by wildlife rehabilitators.
Yeah, when we get them in, we can examine them to determine if they have potentially been affected by the fungus. And a lot of the species we get in especially in the wintertime, are those that choose to hibernate. The big brown bat especially chooses to hibernate in our attics often, which finds their way into our living spaces. So they're often not impacted by the white-nose syndrome. It's the ones that go back to the caves or the mine systems to hibernate that are often impacted by it.
And it seems the little brown bats possibly posed with threatened status
possibly
it's
in
possible.
Danger.
Well, it's yeah, possible. It's, we'll see that. Yep.
It seems to be on the trend.
Yep.
So bats need good public relations.
Yeah.
And you're probably one of the voices that can speak up for the guild of 9 different types of bats. Mm-hmm. Give us some background on why are bats important to our listeners.
Worldwide, they're important because they're all important. Well, yeah. I think all wild animals are important because
there
of the services that they provide to the rest of the Earth community, including humans. And so we think about bats worldwide. There are seed dispersers. We only have insectivores here. They only eat insects. And that alone is something that's of huge value to us because a lot of them will eat pest insects that farmers are concerned about, let alone mosquitoes that all of us are concerned about. So they eat a wide variety of moths and beetles and other insects as they fly through the night. There are other bat species in other parts of the world that they eat fruit. They're fruit-eating bats, and they disperse the seed. They'll eat the fruit. They'll fly away. They'll poop out the seed, and then the new plant will grow. And then there are some nectar-eating bats, and so they're important pollinators.
Pollinators.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah, you work with bats. You work with all wildlife in Iowa.
Yeah.
There's some facilities that are under construction just south of the ledges, the Iowa Wildlife Center, an upcoming fundraiser to assist you in that construction coming up.
Yes.
Tell us about the program this Friday night,
yes.
November 10th.
Well, we have a new benefit coming up that for our first time this year. It's called Wildlife Calls 2017, and it's this Friday night down at the Raccoon River Park Nature Lodge in West Des Moines from 6:30 until 9:30. And that benefit will help fund so many of our programs, whether it's wildlife rehabilitation and buying food and building new cages, stewarding Wildway, our 75 acres of land near the Ledges State Park that you were speaking about, or helping us gear up for more conservation education programming.
Great information, great program. Once again, this Friday night, 6:30
to 9:30. Raccoon River Park Nature Lodge. And people can find out about ticket purchase on our website at www.iowawildlifecenter.org.
Marlene Arisman, keep up the good work.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Matt.
You for
Thank
all
you, KHOI.
The knowledge.
Keep,
you...
keep up this great work.
And become a member. Thanks so much, Marlene. Well, I think we have to do a quick pitch before we come to our last guest, our very interesting guest.
Well, and we learned about sustaining members, but at $55 per year, here's your basic membership here at KHOI. Please give us a call right now. Think about this, 515-292-2878. Or pledge online at khoifm.org or text us at 515-200-7758.
Or stop by at 410 Douglas. Would like to say thank you personally. Drop your check off or cash or whatever you would like to, you know, let us know that you were doing a good job and you want to support us at 410 Douglas in Ames, Iowa.
Right across from the Octagon.
And Heroic Inc., if you, next to the Historical Society. We're in the old Pantorum building.
Yes. Or go to the library and check out the book we're going to be talking about next. The next person we're going to hear from is Sarvinder Neighborhouse, whose children's book, Blue Sky, White Stars, has been creating a national sensation among reviewers throughout the country. When I read about her in the Des Moines Register a week ago, I recognized that she was the Sarvinder who'd been interviewed several times on KHOI. The story that the Register emphasized was the fact that she was an immigrant. I thought that was ironic because I first met her when I was doing a story on Kate Shelley, an Irish immigrant girl who, quote, saved the train. I don't know how many people know that story anymore, but she became legendary and was awarded a distinction of Heroine of Iowa in 1881. Sarvinder had written an account of her heroic story for the children's magazine Highlights. So that's the first time I met her. I think she must have a sense for inspiring stories. So I was eager to hear about the most recent venture. She came into the studio last week to tell me why she wrote the book she
I'm
did.
I'm here with Sarvinder Nehruwarehouse, a local author who's written several books, but this one is published by Penguin. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And you have a very famous illustrator.
Kadir Nelson, and he is very well known in the children's book field. He is a New York Times bestselling illustrator, and he's a Caldecott Honor winner, Coretta Scott King winner, and nominee. So he has all kinds of awards and accolades to his credit.
Well, that's nice when you have written a book that cries out for illustrations.
That's right.
I think that the story behind this is perhaps even more interesting than the book. Why did you write this?
As an author, I don't necessarily get to pick what comes to me and what ideas that I have. I'm always observing and looking around, but I do like Karma Wilson, and she wrote Bear Snores On. So I was reading her book called How to Bake an American Pie, and then the next evening after I had read that, I think it must have stuck in my brain, and this just kind of came to me, and I started writing it down as fast as I could, and I wrote down the illustration notes as fast as I could. It's very sparse, simple words, and it's a parallel between America and the flag, and it's repetitive. So one set of words describes America somehow, like the land or the history or the people, and then the other set of words, which always repeats on the next page, also describe the American flag. So it's a parallel between America and the American flag. But it just kind of came to me. I don't know how to take credit for that. These ideas kind of come over me and come upon me.
You haven't given us much idea of what those words are.
For example, the first words that came to me were blue sky, white stars. And whenever I write, I always have an image that comes into my mind as well. So my image was a ship coming into the harbor at Ellis Island, and it's an immigrant ship, and the Statue of Liberty is there, and there's a navy sky and white stars because it's evening time. So that was the first image that came to me, and then I had the idea, the canton of the flag, the corner of the flag, is also navy with white stars. So I thought, well, that's an interesting parallel. And I thought, well, let's see how far this can take me. Because a lot of times I'll just be able to get two or three examples and then I run out of ideas. And that's not enough for a picture book. So then I started with white rose because instead of white stripes, it could have been white stripes. What has white rose, the idea of a row of Conestoga wagons? So the white stripes symbolized the white rose of Conestoga wagons. And then the red rose symbolized, for me, it was a row of apple trees, but Kadir Nelson did the fall leaves and a row of red trees. It's beautiful. So I just kind of kept going with these parallels. I can tell you my favorite one is Abraham Lincoln and the words well worn, because the lines on Abraham Lincoln's face, they tell a story all their own of his life. And I just imagine that every soldier that fell was a crease in his face, and every decision he had to make was another crease in his face. And so I put well-worn as Abraham Lincoln's face, and then, of course, next to it was the Civil War flag that was well-worn and torn because of battle. So it's this parallel between America and the flag.
I understand, though, that one of the reasons that you were inspired was because your family came from India?
Yes. So my dad came over on a scholarship to Columbus, Ohio, and then he came back again to study vet med at Iowa State University, which is what brought us here. And in the back of the book, there's an author's note, and which is my story and my family's story, where my great-grandfather, Bhutta Singh, came over, and he boarded a ship. I think it was in Singapore, and he was planning on coming to the United States, and then at the last moment, he disembarked and decided not to come. And my dad said, "Grandfather, why didn't you come?" So it was my dad's dream, and I think maybe my ancestor's dream, to come to America, which was the light of the world. So I kind of feel like my destiny kind of was set in motion way back when of coming to America, you know, because the desires and the seed was planted way back when, with my great-grandfather. And then, of course, our family came with my dad.
You said your father came to Iowa State. Did you grow up in Ames?
I did grow up in Ames. I was born in India, but then we came over because my dad went to Iowa State University. He got his PhD. So our family came over, and at that time in the 1960s, there was a lot going on in our country with civil unrest. You know, as a four-year-old, I really didn't have any clue about that, really, in a broader sense with the country, you know. But yes, we came over. It was a very different time back then. My dad came over on an assistantship while he was working to get his doctorate, and it was the time where you had one-car garages and maybe you had one car that you drove around. And
did you have Indian friends when you were a child?
Well, I did have some Indian friends, but they were few and far between, and they weren't necessarily my age, and they didn't go to my school. So that made it a little bit harder because they were at a different school, so I couldn't really do day-to-day activities with them. There might have been other kids that were non-Caucasian that went to Meeker School, but I really don't remember them.
Was the Indian Cultural Association a part of your childhood?
Yes, it was a big part of my childhood. Every year they put on a program. And the Bhangra, my dad would dance the Bhangra, and my older brother too, and which is a traditional Indian dance that celebrates for farmers. I come from a family of farmers in India, up in Punjab. It's a traditional dance done at harvest to celebrate the harvest. And it's very funny and musical, and, you know, you sing and you dance, and there were other things that people did, but it was a big part. It was very fun.
Did you grow up speaking English, or did you speak one of the Indian languages?
Well, Punjabi is similar to Hindi, but it's not quite the same. And so that was my first language, but then I don't know how I learned English, through osmosis and the television and going to school, but somehow I learned English. And I know by first grade I was able to read the language.
Can you still speak Punjabi?
I don't speak Punjabi. So I left that behind a long time ago. So English is my primary language. I just didn't have a lot of use or opportunity, I guess, except maybe at home. And it kind of became few and far between, and then it just kind of became non-existent.
Did you feel different when you were growing up?
Oh, yes. I felt very different. Not really because I noticed it, but because other people would notice it and they would point out that I was different. So I think it was puzzling to me. I didn't really understand. Again, I was 4 years old, so I didn't really understand what was going on. And I didn't really understand the culture very well. I can't say that I still understand the culture very well, to be real honest.
You mean American?
The American culture. Right. There's things about it that just don't make sense to me, or I just don't understand. So, but I guess, you know, if I had grown up in India, I probably would have felt that way there too. There's certain aspects that just don't make very much sense. But it was, you know, different clothes, different food, different language, and everything that was familiar I had to leave behind and come to the very unfamiliar, including weather, everything.
Well, I notice that your last name is Neighborhaus.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that's an Indian name.
That's correct. Well, actually, my maiden name was Ball, B-A-L, with one L. And so I really liked that because it was at the beginning of the alphabet. It was only three letters long. It was, you know, short and sweet. And then I married my husband, Tom Neighborhaus, and so now I inherited a very long last name, and it's German.
How does this tie into Blue Sky, White Stars?
Well, you know, the first image that came to me was immigrants on a ship coming in. With the illustrations, it really is about the melting pot of America and just the history of America when it comes to for example, Abraham Lincoln, and it does include the March on Washington. And for that one, I really like that one, too. The words are woven together. And Kadir Nelson does his history. He does his research when he looks up events. And so in the illustrations, people have crisscrossed their arms and they're holding hands. And that's historically accurate. And so they really were literally woven together. But then, of course, the colors of the flag are also woven together. Three different colors come together and weave and make up the flag. So, again, it's that parallel of, different colors in the sense of cultures and people and then different colors in the threads of the flag. It's very, very much the history and melting pot of America idea.
Sarvinder also described things she remembered about growing up in Ames. But I didn't include them because even the details she talked about mirrored the things I remembered about my children's experiences in Ames growing up. We even had a Punjabi family living right behind us, and we carpooled with them. So what was it that caught the imagination of one of the leading publishing houses in America? This is the dream of a child who came to America, not the memories of an immigrant child. I think the power of this book is partly the time it was written. Now, here are a couple of the dozens of rave reviews I saw online. Blue Sky, White Stars filled me with a sense of pride. Sarvinder Naberhaus's few but thoughtfully chosen words paired with Kadir Nelson's beautiful illustrations spoke volumes. I can't imagine all the children and adults it will touch. To me, this is a book to share often and is one to remove from the shelves and display in a room. I think anyone who spots it will be drawn to it and be better for reading it. It's that amazing. Another one. Phenomenal. A love letter to the country America can still be. We'll leave Sarvinder as she tells us how she responded to all the attention Blue Sky, White Stars has attracted.
I am a little bit surprised when I wrote the words in my house, and there's not very many words. I think there's maybe about 60 words. I didn't expect those 60 words to have such a big impact. It has drawn a lot of national media and national attention to these 60 words. And it's just very interesting to write those down in a little notebook in my room, in my house, and yet have them leave and go out and impact the world. So you don't necessarily know what impact words have on people. I think they have a lot of impact on people, and they stay with people a lot longer than you think they would and make a impact and a mark on them. But I would like to mention I do have a board book that also just came out, and it's called Lines. And Blue Sky, White Stars is very wonderful, but Lines is my favorite thing that I've ever written and probably will be. So I do hope maybe that if you check out Blue Sky, White Stars at the library, maybe you'll check out Lines as well.
And are there any places locally where you can buy either of those books?
Yes. I know you can get them at Books-A-Million in Ames, and I know Blue Sky, White Stars is also available at the University Bookstore. And then, of course, you can always get them online.
Thank you, Sarvinder.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
This is KHOI Community Radio, doing one of the things we love best, bring amazing local people to the attention of our listeners. This is more than finding good stories. It is about developing relationships. Through Community Bookshelf, we develop connections with local authors, some of whom read their own books aloud to you. We love children's books, too, especially when they're as inspiring as Blue Sky, White Stars.
That's why we hope you'll realize just how precious these local connections are. We are committed to finding the things that draw our community together. Even in the election tomorrow, we have tried to give all candidates the feeling that they've been heard as much as they wanted to. And we hope you've heard enough that you can have reasons to go out and vote. But even with literally hundreds of volunteer hours every week, we can't keep it without you. If you haven't become a member, please decide to join us.
You know, the opportunity to be a member here of KHOY Community Radio, we're still in the formative stages of 5 years into this experiment and more to come. So our basic membership is $55 a year. We're making an appeal for you to please consider contributing, and that would be at our telephone number 515. Go to our website, khoifm.org. We can benefit from your sustaining membership goals of $250 per year as a sustaining member, but also consider being a $100 a year member. We can benefit at any stage that your budget will allow.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. Remember, you can also hear us online at KHOI-FM.
And tomorrow night, you're invited to come down to 410 Douglas for the first of the Pantorium sessions with Jen McClung at 7 p.m. Today's show was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Long Shot by Jen McClung from her CD, Wildfire.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
Stay tuned for Democracy Now! With headline news at the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m. Let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878 or email us at khoiradio@gmail.com or go to the contact page of our website, khoifm.org.
And press the yellow button. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And during the next 2 weeks of our fall fund drive, we urge you to take making it possible seriously. You can call us at 515-292-2878 or donate online at khoi.org. Or stop by the Pantorium with a check. You might just catch a Pantorium session while you're here. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, so I saw
the city,
by the shadow of the steeple,
by the relief office,
I saw my people
as they stood there hungry.
I said,
what
Stop me.
I go walking
as I go.